Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is about the MK party. And this is taking a little bit of a step back, actually, from the current developments, just to kind of, I think, describe to listeners, these guys are kind of crazy. Now, why do I say that? Well, often when political parties put out media statements or communiques or that kind of thing, or, they have speeches and that sort of stuff, their supporters, their most dedicated supporters will probably hear it. Their party members will probably see it. But the media usually has a very cut down version of exactly what they say. So we've seen some of the stuff in MK's manifesto that sounds quite wild. So people have, I think, a rough idea of how they speak in terms of policy. But in terms of communique, the MK party is a little bit, shall we say, in my opinion, insane. So let me just read you from the media statement, and I'll abridge it quite a lot, from MK about why they will not be attending President Ramaphosa's inauguration. The Mkhonto weSizwe party, the official opposition of South Africa, I'm quoting from the statement here, will not participate in the farcical inauguration of Cyril Ramaphosa as the puppet DA-sponsored president tomorrow. We refuse join in the spitting of the graves of those who died for this freedom by attending the symbolic wedding ceremony of a house Negro called Ramaphosa with the slave master Helen Zille. Then goes on to, in a sort of confused state, talk about Ramaphosa's presidency, and they put it in quotation marks. They repeat the accusation that the election was stolen by the ANC. They call this deal the result of a sellout deal signed by Fikile Mbalula and Helen Zille last week, as well as the rigged and illegal election. And then weirdly, they sort of tack on to the end of the statement some criticism of the ANC forming a agreement with the Freedom Front Plus in the Northern Cape. However, they do at the end then suddenly reverse their previous statements of how they are against the Constitution to say that all people who are in favor of the current Constitution should support their efforts, and that they will use, quote, all legal means at our disposal to expose, fight, and destroy the incoming illegitimate regime of Ramaphosa, Steenhuisen, and Groenewald. Chris, this is not a positive development for the way discourse goes in South Africa. I mean, the EFF, I thought, had already brought racism and insanity into our politics in a big way, much bigger way than it had been since 94. But this is on another level. What do you make of this?
Yeah, if your brand, be this now Zuma or MK, if your brand is built around revolutionary promises, upending the status quo, not seeing as legitimate the current iteration of not just the government, but the constitution, so things that underpin the government, how things operate, broadly how society is to be administered or managed kind of thing. If that's your value offering, as it were, and that's how you try and convince people to vote for you, you think you've got the solution, you need to always out-radicalize or out-rebel yourself. You need to outdo yourself. And that tends to push you in directions that don't make really coherent, or into positions that don't make coherent sense, don't all hang together. And I think, as has happened in the last week or two, you shoot yourself in the foot. You exclude yourself from potential discussions and negotiations. You lessen the impact that you could have within the corridors of power and within government. So that's not to say that you can't still try and overthrow the government and find other ways to affect change, but you constrict the avenues open to you. So it's a bit maybe short-sighted in that sense. So I don't know if there's, I guess to me, this is another instance to reinforce the theory that for MK and for former President Zuma, the particular line of attack now is strongly motivated just by emotionalism and reacting to whatever agenda is set by the sort of center at the moment that is being set in South African politics. There's nothing, it's not strategic thinking. That's not to underestimate former President Zuma, but it maybe that sense of frustration, that emotionalism now means you just put out these sorts of statements, you act at whatever opportunity you might get, but there's no long-term strategy and no long-term coherence. And if someone like Zuma isn't around, what is MK's strategy going forward? Are you the official opposition? If you don't see the constitution as legitimate, you don't see the government as legitimate, so you shouldn't attend National Assembly. Where does it place MK in terms of how they go forward over the next 5 to 10 years? Do they actually build a party in terms of trying to convince people, more people to vote for them? It becomes very difficult for it to have some sort of identity, I think. I agree with you on the rhetoric point, but I also... You become so shrill in a way. And I don't know if that really... If you attract people to your banner as much as you would have otherwise.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting things going on here. Firstly, I do think this is part of a strategy. I just think it's a very kind of crude strategy. It's just to be basically use crude racism as a means to delegitimize the current government and to claim that it is, quote unquote, selling out Black South Africans. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of rich coming from the party that was so closely aligned to the Gupta family, literally foreign businessmen who got an enormous amount of influence in this country through, close financial connections. So I think in a certain sense, this is very much going to ring hollow. And I think the problem with the MK strategy here, at least initially, is that they've at first tried to sort of delegitimize the entire system. The election is fake. Ramaphosa is fake. The country has been controlled by evil white puppet masters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it isn't really working so far. I think there was always this sort of implied menace in a lot of MK's communique, which was much more explicit in the lead up to the election, that there would be some kind of violence if MK didn't get its way. And as well as MK did in the election, getting, 15%, 14.5% of the vote, they still haven't really gotten their way. They're out of government in KZN. They're out of national government at the moment. And they kind of seem to be sort of spinning around looking for something to do. And I don't think they have the ability to call up the level of violence that we have seen previously in the country, particularly in July of 2021, which MK has always gotten the credit for, but I think is actually was much more driven in many ways by people's frustration with the COVID lockdown and also the socioeconomic conditions that so many people are. I mean, I remember one video from the riots of a guy running into, I think it was a spa or something, filming himself, face planting his head into a cake and eating it while laughing madly. And you just think to yourself, this doesn't really seem very political, does it? I think that was always kind of what the underlying thing is, that, you know, MK may have played a very important role in sparking those things, or at least people, you know, kind of close to MK. But at the end of the day, they don't have this kind of magic ability to summon legions of people onto the street, despite what Jacob Zuma would have you believe. And I think that means now they have to change their strategy, and we can kind of see it here. They're already talking about using all legal means at our disposal. They're being much more circumspect and careful with their wording as compared to the sort of pre-election period where, let's just say, legal did not enter into some of the rhetoric. I don't know, Chris, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I take all your points there. And just to also highlight what the sort of goal is of MK. What is its ultimate use? And in the current context, it is, to me at least, not progressive causes and all that sort of thing, but more the fact that between April and September next year, Zuma's arms deal trial is set to be heard and to take place. So the more that you can get this vehicle of MK animating people, the more you can then extract concessions if you manage to disrupt things from the established government. And I think then over time, that is parlayed into some kind of protection from prosecution. So keep that in mind as well. Just what is the animus maybe behind it, behind the rhetoric and the words?
Definitely. So let's quickly go on to our next topic, which is about the inauguration of President Ramaphosa. I did once attend a presidential inauguration, which was Zuma's back in 2009, which rained on us during the inauguration, which I think was perhaps a sign of things to come. But Chris, what did you think of the inauguration, just in terms of what Ramaphosa said and also the spectacle of the whole thing?
So I will say this with the caveat of, and maybe open up myself to ridicule, I'm trying to watch and read all statements coming from the GNU, from the individual parties with, you know, truckloads of salt and skepticism. But I thought the speech, for what it was good, acknowledging mistakes that had been made, and now committing to certain focus areas going forward. You know, we've heard it all before. I'm not saying it's going to be different this time, but there's a bit of a different tone, it seemed to me, in some key aspect areas. So we'll see now what that means in terms of actual practicality. Next thing on the list is, I'm not sure how soon we'll get it, of course, but the announcement of the cabinet, see who gets what positions, how it all shakes out. But I thought for the occasion of what an inauguration should be, I thought it was pretty good. We didn't see as much, from a personal point of view, as much aircraft activity as I would have wanted, but what there was, I thought was impressive. So at least for that, things seem to work quite well. And I do, one sort of overall point I want to mention, it's not to become, to say this is South Africa's last chance sort of thing, but now that you have the sort of parties around the center consolidating, let's say around 273 seats in the National Assembly, or 68%, your Progressive Caucus, 25%-ish. If this opportunity isn't used now by the government of national unity broadly to get voters, to reinforce to voters that if you vote differently, then government will function differently. It will then try and it will adapt, it will improve its service delivery, et cetera, et cetera. If that democratic mechanism doesn't work, and if the trust in that continues to be eroded, you then open up more space for your more revolutionary forces over time. So we have that opportunity now, but I think it could be a sort of once in a generation kind of thing.
And I think, you know, MK's initial strategy of delegitimizing the whole system, if we've had 5 years of a failed GNU, then that strategy might become a lot more successful than it was this time. You know, while I think South Africans generally don't like chaos, maybe they'll be more open to it if we don't seize the opportunity here to change the way things are done. Speaking of which, let's go into sort of, I think, one of the early signs of what to look out for and how this GNU or the GNU is going to be going. That's, of course, Government of National Unity. And that is yesterday in an interview with Clement Mayotela, Helen Ziller said that the ANC did not consult the rest of the Government of National Unity about the Patriotic Alliance joining. And she says she has written to Fikile Mbalula to raise this concern. She also says that the Government of National Unity document requires that the ANC consult parties in the Government of National Unity before others join. And that should Ramaphosa give the PA ministerial positions, the DA will complain because the ANC did not consult the rest of the Government of National Unity about the PA signing and joining. At the same time, Steenhuisen is also saying, in different interviews, that we're not going to be confined to the fringes of the GNU, he said specifically. We would like to play a meaningful role in government. We are not going to be confined to the fringes. We made it very clear in our election manifesto there are a number of key areas we felt are essential for South Africa to resolve over the next 5 years so we get the country moving forward. So the DA is taking quite a tough line here, trying, I think, to sort of set the initial terms for how this thing is going to work, not wanting to let themselves be walked over. But at the very same time, they're also, so if you can imagine, that's the stick on the ANC. They're saying, you know, you can't ignore us, play nice with us. They're also offering a carrot. And we've seen that in the fact that Helen Ziller was asked about the DA's thoughts on the Palapala issue. And essentially, Ziller said that the party will protect Cyril Ramaphosa should there be an impeachment motion related to Palapala. And this seems to be as kind of payment for, you know, influence within the GNU. Chris, some early important tests. What do you think is going to come of them?
Yeah, and here the onus on both of the biggest parties in the GNU in terms of how they go about things. I think for the ANC, having to realize that, it did indeed attain 40%, its lowest ever performance, and that psychological journey could take longer than many people think. Yes, the rhetoric has been good, accepting of the results, not a transfer of power to another party as big as it, but having to now form a national government, a coalition government. So that comes with growing pains. And then for the DA as well, this interesting opportunity for it. I know it can be seen very much as a threat from certain perspectives and many risks, but also the opportunity where, yes, you play the carrot and the stick approach, how you engage with the ANC, the channels that you choose to do that, and also then how you communicate with the voters in terms of what your role you are trying to play, that you're not just going to be subsumed into the ANC, but you also want the government to function. So it's a very difficult maybe balancing act. And I'm not saying that there's a sort of guidebook on how you do this sort of thing. Maybe it is, you've got some principles and some long-term strategy that you look at, but then also politics does boil down to the art of the possible. So dealing with the hand you've been dealt, that's the situation on the table. For the markets, this is the utopian outcome. This is perfect. I mean, the rand is breaking through the 18 rand to the dollar barrier. All the problems are solved. But now this is the real work. Now time for the real work.
Exactly. I've thought that the market reaction has been way over the top, actually, to this. Yeah. Like, yes, the possible upside, I think, will be there. It's not completely insane. It's just jumping the gun. We haven't even had the announcement of cabinet yet. That's exactly at the point at which things could fall apart, because, you know, maybe the DA says, oh, we haven't got enough people. Maybe the IFP says we haven't gotten what we want, and they walk away, and then the whole thing kind of starts to fall apart. So the market should chill their jets, I think, for a little bit. Even if Ramaphosa has been confirmed as the president now, that doesn't mean that we're going to have a smooth policy ride if the politicians don't play their cards right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's sort of that idea of riding a wave. So if there's more risk on assets, you know, going in, of course, over time, you hope that you get rewarded for taking on that higher risk. So you try and ride that wave. But don't think that this trajectory is guaranteed to just be upwards and onwards. I think there are many potholes in the way. That doesn't mean the overall trajectory can't be positive, but the bumps along the road, I think, are quite substantial. That doesn't mean that the whole thing falls apart. It doesn't mean that it's all at an end if there are core serious disagreements and if you don't get the particular post in the cabinet that you wanted. But then how do you deal with that, the fallout thereof? How do you ensure that, okay, this is the issue we've encountered, let's try and fix it. If we can't, freeze it until whatever. Like, focus on what you can actually achieve.
Exactly. You know, that's why I've kind of been saying that while I was skeptical of this whole thing, I'm very much sort of open to see where it goes. No. Do we actually see, and it's going to take a while before we see that, how does cabinet get divided up? Who gets what? Do ministers have actual ability to change policy? Is there going to be a difference in policy between this government and the last one? These are all very important questions that we still actually don't know the answer to. We can speculate. And we can say, oh, yes, it'll be different, or no, it'll never be different. But I think right now it's still time to kind of wait and see what exactly comes of these initial sort of maneuverings. And like I said, these couple of stories we've seen here, like the dispute about the PA joining and also the DA saying it's not going to be pushed to the fringes, how that's managed is going to determine whether this thing succeeds or not. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye on the space. Anyway, thank you very much for watching. We hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.